Let's welcome Tom to the show. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
How are you?
I am well, thank you.
All right. So welcome. Tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive, as we always do at the beginning of the segment.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Yes, Consumer Guide Automotive, we've been around since 1967. We review virtually every new car and truck that you can buy. We're at consumerguide.com. We have some fun with the news and also do our in-depth reviews at our blog, which is the cddailydrive.com blog. Please check it out.
Okay, the cddailydrive.com blog.
Yep.
Is also in a little bit, you guys are going to be posting Steve and Johnny's latest road test, correct?
Yeah, Steve and Johnny do roughly a review for us a month, and tomorrow at about 2 o'clock I'll be posting their video review. They do great videos of the Camry XLE.
Okay. So there you go, Steve and Johnny doing their video, their road test, and you can check it out at cgdailydrive.com. It'll be up in about 12 hours.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, great. All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. Any and all automotive and car-related questions, get them in now, 312-981-7200. Lots of car stories to talk about and lots of your questions to answer. That's all coming up right after we break here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Tom Appel is with us. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, contributor to their Daily Drive blog. And you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he is here to answer any and all of your car and automotive-related questions at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Let's welcome Tom back to the show. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Hey, so what are you driving? I always like to ask what have you been driving?
Oh, that's a great question. I am driving a really great sleeper, and when car guys say sleeper, they mean a car that doesn't look like much, but it really is. I'm driving the Lexus GSF.
Hmm.
So that's a Lexus GF. That's the midsize Lexus sedan, stuffed full of V8 goodness. It's got a 5-liter V8 stuffed under the hood. Really subtle styling changes. Great car. Great car.
Oh, great. What were you driving before that?
This weekend, I was driving the Genesis G80. Genesis is Hyundai's new luxury spinoff brand. The G80 is the smaller of their two large sedans. I was driving the Sport model, which has all sorts of cool blackout trim and a turbocharged 3.3-liter V6. Interesting car. Really nice price point. It comes in at $54,000. It'd be very interesting to see if Hyundai can take any market share in the luxury market with this thing.
Oh, okay. And, you know, you guys over there at Consumer Guide Automotive are always testing out cars. What's been, like, a favorite recently?
Recently we had, just an absurd thing, but a wonderful thing. We had the Rolls-Royce Dawn.
No, come on.
Yeah.
What to describe that to me?
Yeah, the Rolls-Royce Dawn is a huge convertible, two-door convertible, huge car, and just wonderfully finished. It's absurd. It's hard to imagine this much luxury in a home, much less a car. And it's the price of a home. Fully optioned, the car was about $450,000.
Oh, man.
One of the great options was Cannondale paneling. Cannondale is a luxury furniture manufacturer, and they did these wonderful matching veneers for the interior of the car. The wood package is $22,000.
Oh, my God.
So more than I paid for my last two personal cars combined. But that's
wow.
It's totally beautiful.
Yeah.
Matched veneers front to back. You could just see the tree continuing through the vehicle. Absolutely incredible.
What kind of looks were people getting when that was being driven?
You get a fair amount of looks. Rolls-Royces are not that uncommon, but they're not common in Chicago. You see them more in California, around L.A., places like that. You don't see them in Chicago. And it's a very large car, and it's a funny car to see with the top down. It's actually fairly attractive, but it stands out.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah, you know, real quick, Tom, I don't know if I've told you this quick story. Speaking of convertible Rolls Royces, my friend was driving down Michigan Avenue one time a bunch of years ago, and he was at an intersection. I think it was Michigan and Chicago going southbound, and he's at an intersection, and he sees, you know, all the foot traffic crossing the street, and they start to look over and start cheering and pointing. So my friend turns and looks, and in a convertible Rolls Royce at the stoplight, a couple of lanes over, was Mr. T.
That guy.
Yeah. in a convertible Rolls Royce, you know, with the mohawk, the chains, the feather earrings, the whole Mr. T nine, and he's sitting there waving, saying hello to everybody. Everybody's cheering for Mr. T, and he's driving this big Rolls Royce convertible, and hanging from the rearview mirror is a Mr. T air freshener.
Okay, that's the best detail.
Well, that's the best part. And my friend said, you know, that's when you know you've made it, is when you're sitting in a Rolls Royce, people are waving at you, and there's an air freshener of yourself.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
He used to menace the Northwest suburbs. He was a regular out here about 20 years ago in his Rolls Royce convertible.
Yeah.
I think more people than not saw that guy around this area at some point.
Yeah, and I always love the story about how he wanted to make Lake Forest not a forest. When he lived in Lake Forest and he wanted to chop down all the trees, because he didn't want trees. And I'm like, if you don't want trees, Mr. T, you might not want to live in a place with the word forest in the name.
It would seem easier to move than to change that.
Yeah. So speaking of suburbs, and some of the suburbs here in Chicago have been horribly flooded over the past week. And there's tips for navigating flooded roadways that we would like to talk about. Now, ultimately, though, Tom, it's just don't go through. If it's flooded, don't drive your car through it is the number one rule, right?
Yeah, because one of the things, even if you're seeing cars make it, if the water is sort of higher than the center hub, you're kicking water up underneath the car. And your car is well waterproof. The problem isn't that some water is going to mess things up under the hood. It's not. Things down there can get wet. What can happen is that you're forcing a vehicle through the water is that the water is shooting up in sort of these powerful jets. And they can actually damage things under the hood. And that's not the kind of thing that you can just park the car on the side and wait for it to dry out. You've probably done permanent damage if your car stalls, and you're going to have it towed.
Mm-hmm. Now, for those people who, like, if you can't avoid the standing water, is there any advice on if it has to happen?
Yeah, you just want to idle through there.
Mm-hmm.
Just as little speed as possible, because you just don't want to force water up under the hood. If it gets wet, it's fine, but if you start forcing water up there, you're pushing things around, and that's when bad things happen.
Yeah, it's just so. I mean, you know, but you see it all the time, Tom. I mean, every time there's any kind of flooding in the city or anywhere, and I see viaducts that are flooded, you'll see cars just. I'll be the one person to make it through.
I drive through Des Plaines. That's part of my commute.
Yeah.
And I actually cross right around Rand Road. I cross the river right around Rand Road.
Yeah.
So I've seen these cars where there's just cars stuck in a puddle. And you're like, why did that happen again?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand it. I really just don't. And if just don't do it is the ultimate advice, because you can really, really ruin your car. And also, another thing, Tom, that the detail in one of the pieces that I read was that if your car does stall and you're in the water, don't try to start it. Because it needs air to start the car.
Yeah, one of the things that could happen, if your tailpipe is underwater, it is possible to pull water in through the tailpipe, and that could damage your catalytic converter. And if it gets past that and actually into the engine, then you're really hosed, because you actually have water inside the engine, and that could take weeks to dry out, or you actually have to have the cylinder heads removed, which is big money.
Yeah, so just don't do it. And I know it's terrible to deal with all this flooding, and I feel terrible for everybody who has had to deal with this for the past week. But if you're driving in your car, don't do it, man. That's just, you're asking for trouble. Just don't do it.
Yeah, go around.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Tom. Thanks. Hang on a second, okay?
Will do.
Tom Appel is with us. He will answer any and all of your car-related questions. So call us or text us right now, 312-981-7200. More car topics to talk about as well. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. It is 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. You program them. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later on, we are going to talk about phrases that you shouldn't use anymore. Ridiculous phrases, that were a piece that was written by Dr. Travis Bradbury. asking people to stop saying ridiculous phrases. And then we're going to talk about regionality and language, and maybe some grammar stuff or some language stuff that drives you nuts, like pet peeves, things like that. Esmeralda brought some weird candy in to the studio, so we're going to eat weird candy live and give you a review of it and tell you all about that. So that's all coming up. But right now we're talking cars and everything automotive with Tom Appel from the Consumer Guide Automotive. And you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And if you have any car or automotive question, call or text right now, 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Tom back to the show. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to what seems to be a monthly topic, recalls.
Yeah.
So Honda has a recall happening right now. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a very large recall, 1.5 million vehicles, all Honda Accords made since 2013. So that's a lot of the Accords made since 2013. Mm. It's a big recall. It's not a very serious recall. There's a problem with an underhood battery condition gauge that just monitors the condition of the battery. And apparently in a couple of instances, it can get dirty and it can catch fire. So there have been 4 reported underhood fires, no injuries, no deaths, nothing like that, no accidents. But they're going to replace them all. Here's the problem. They don't have the replacement devices yet. So what's going to happen is they're going to start sending out recall notices at the end of the month, and they're going to do a quick fix that should stave off any problems until the actual replacement part comes. So if you have a car with this problem, you're probably going to have to go to the dealer twice.
Mm, okay. People will get notices, obviously, if they have the car.
Yes, they will, and you can check to see if your car is involved at safercar.gov.
Safercar.gov.
Yeah.
Okay. Boy, that is a big recall.
Yeah, that's a lot of cars. That's basically every Accord.
Yeah. Jeez. Wow. Okay. So people will be aware of that, over 1 million and a half Honda Accords.
Yep.
It's a lot of cars. All right. Okay. Let's see. We got a couple of texts coming in, Tom.
Cool.
And Tom, 608 area code, says, Tom, I was driving past the Belvedere assembly plant tonight, and I saw them loading a pair of test mules onto a car hauler. Any thoughts on what they might have been? Explain what test mules are to everybody.
Yeah. Test mules. There are different things, and I think that what he's looking at might not actually be a test mule. Test mules are vehicles that are often dummied up to not look like anything, in which they're testing things like air conditioners or engines or transmissions or all of those things, and they may not look like the vehicle they're supposed to. And this gets to keep the design a secret, as well as test these things without having fully developed the vehicle. Belvedere isn't the place where they would do that kind of testing. More likely what was happening was that they were testing cars actually being assembled there. So they should be the thing about Belvedere, which is an FCA plant, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, and that's the company that now makes Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram products.
Mm-hmm.
They're shifting production up there. They used to make the Dodge Dart. The Dodge Dart was discontinued. They also made the Jeep Compass and the Jeep Patriot. Those vehicles have been shifted out of that plant. One's discontinued, the Patriot and the Cherokee. The Compass is being produced elsewhere now. The Jeep Cherokee is moving into that plant, so that's good news for Belvedere. That's a high-volume product, so that means lots of jobs out there. But I think they're running the first of those down the line right now.
Oh, okay.
So the vehicles that are being tested are early production.
Okay. All right. Well, that explains that. 847 area code said, it is time to replace my 11-year-old PT Cruiser, my all-time favorite vehicle. What should I look at now?
That's a tough one because there's nothing retro-looking anymore. The PT Cruiser was the little compact four-door that looked kind of retro. It had fender flares and rounded. It was a cool-looking little car.
I love PT Cruisers. I thought they were really, really cool. My ex-mother-in-law had one, and it was always a fun car to ride in and drive.
Yeah, it was a cool car. I enjoyed it, too. It wasn't the most refined vehicle in the world, but it had spunk.
Yeah.
Chevy made the HHR, which was a similar concept for a while, but both of those vehicles are now discontinued. There's really nothing out there that has a retro look to it. I think the closest thing that approaches that vehicle in concept is the Kia Soul, which is also a very roomy four-door vehicle that's sort of like a crossover, but not really. It's a little lower to the ground, but greases space, kind of radical styling.
Yeah.
That's a good way to go.
And gerbils can drive it.
And see, the road access, I think, is a big deal.
Yeah. Well, no, those are cool. Those are pretty cool looking cars. Now, what about if it's not, if the person is talking about the way the car drives, not just necessarily what it looks like? Is there anything comparable to the way a PT Cruiser drove?
Yeah, it was a pretty conventional car from behind the wheel. There wasn't really a lot going on there unless you had one of the rare turbo models, which the Kia Soul is now available as a turbo. Trying to think what else might be out there. If you wanted to try to find a late model Scion XB, which was that little box on wheels, that's similar in concept, too, and those were cool.
Okay. All right. There you go. All right. 50th anniversary of the Chevy Camaro, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that, the Camaro. And I really wasn't aware until I read this piece the intense sort of battle between the Mustang and the Camaro.
Yeah, and some of that's real and some of that's sort of trumped up by the manufacturers.
Oh, okay.
But it's a real thing. And the Camaro was the Mustang was redesigned for 2010, and then the Camaro came back into production. And since that time, there's been a lot of back and forth. And since the Camaro was redesigned and the Mustang finally got an independent rear suspension, which really brought that vehicle out of the Stone Age, there's been just a lot of interest in those cars, and it's only starting to die off right now. But it went back and forth, and Camaro kind of stole it back for a while, but now Mustang's got it back. And it sort of depends on which car is newest at the time.
Mm. And that now they when the Camaro was brought out in 1967,
yeah,
they had the Corvair, the Chevelle, and the Corvette already, right? And this kind of filled a gap.
Yeah, because the Chevelle really was your muscle car. That was your midsize car, stuffed full of a big engine. The Corvair was just kind of a small sporty car in a European tradition. Very cool car.
Mm-hmm.
The Camaro was what soon became known as a pony car in deference to the Mustang. And that was sort of your sporty GT car, but it had a back seat. It cost a lot less than a Corvette, a little less committed to being sporty than the Corvette. It filled a niche because it was affordable at the time.
Does a Camaro, but now Camaros look completely different than they used to, right? They've changed a lot over the 50 years.
Yeah, when they redesigned the Camaro a few years ago, the big deal was to make it look back like the 67. And it does to some extent. It's got some sharp angles, and it looks tidy, and it doesn't waste any space. But, these are far more sports-oriented vehicles than they used to be. They're a little bit smaller, a little bit lighter, a little more buttoned down.
And, the Mustang always... Yeah, there have been changes in the design of the Mustang, but you can always tell a Mustang when you see a Mustang.
You can, and now it looks more like a Mustang again than it ever did. Mustang's a funny thing, too, because they were always trying to keep the price down of that. It was always a very accessible way to get into a V8-powered vehicle. And these days now the V8's a little bit less important because there were turbocharged 4s that do what a V8 used to do. But again, it's still a cheap way to get 300 horsepower.
Mm-hmm. And the Mustang is my favorite car. I love the look of the Mustang, and I just think it's always been my favorite car. And I even like the modern Mustangs now. I think they look great.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. And you ever have a Camaro?
I have not driven a Camaro in a while. I've driven plenty of Mustangs, and I absolutely love the Mustangs. The Camaro's great too. One of the problems with the Camaro for anybody big or tall or wide is that it's a little cramped. The Mustang is far more user friendly in terms of cabin space.
Mm-hmm. Now, did was there ever a rivalry between the Camaro and the Firebird?
You know, there wasn't. I mean, there probably was, and there were probably people trying to decide, but you had hardcore Chevy guys and hardcore Pontiac guys.
Mm.
And the thing about the Firebird, too, is it was a little bit more expensive. And this will mean something to muscle car guys. Also, the Firebird, it was easier to get into a big block engine than the Firebird. It was just a little bit less of a race car and a little bit more of a muscle car under the hood. And that was in the early days. Later on, they shared engines and drivetrains and stuff.
Yeah.
In the early days, they were kind of different animals, even though they were very similar mechanically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had a Firebird. I had a Firebird for many years, and I liked my Firebird, but it had a tendency to be taken into the shop a lot.
The middle two generations of the Camaro and Firebird were not very reliable things, and the cars that were built in the California Van Nuys plant were considered the least reliable cars built for a number of years.
Yeah, I had a 79.
Yeah, that was out of there.
Yeah, and I spent a lot of time paying mechanics during my tenure as a Firebird owner. So I never had a Camaro. I've driven a couple of Camaros. I think they're really cool cars. And so it's 50th anniversary. Did Chevy do anything to celebrate it big time or anything?
No, not really. It's interesting. There's been a couple of big anniversaries come by, and manufacturers have not celebrated them. Camaro did 50 years. And a really interesting anniversary right now is the 100th anniversary of the Ford truck. The first ever Ford truck, which was based on a Model T, the TT, was introduced for 17, way back in 1917.
Is that right?
Yeah, Ford hasn't really done anything. It seems like such a big thing.
Especially for Ford. I mean, the Ford trucks are just, you know, that goes hand in hand with what Ford is.
Yeah, it really is. I wonder if there's just something arbitrary about it, because the truck looked just like a Model T.
Yeah.
So it wasn't very distinct in and of itself. It's more of an emotional moment than an actual functional moment.
Yeah, no, but that's true, though. But you would think 100 years of Ford trucks, that would be a great marketing campaign.
I would think.
Yeah.
But so far, nothing.
So far, nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Chevy Camaro, happy 50th anniversary to the Chevy Camaro.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Tom, hang on, all right?
Will do.
Tom Appel is with us. He stops by every month to talk cars and automotive stuff. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he's with Consumer Guide Automotive, and you can check out consumerguide.com and cgdailydrive.com for their Daily Drive blog. And in about a little less than 12 hours, Steve and Johnny's latest road test video will be posted, and you can watch that and check that out as well. Okay, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN, and more with Tom Appel. And if you have any and all automotive questions and you want them answered, call us up right now, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll be right back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. Two for Tuesday coming up. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs. Get them in now, 312-981-7200. We are going to talk about phrases and grammar and language that drives you crazy. That's all coming up as well. And we're going to taste test some strange candy from foreign lands. That's going to be coming up as well. If you want to jump in here with a question for Tom Appel, from Consumer Guide Automotive about cars, do it now at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And let's welcome Tom back to the show. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
All right. We have some texts coming in. 773 area code says, I have a friend who is looking into convertibles. Should he avoid hard tops, or is there a real difference at this time?
The hardtop convertible craze seems to have faded. We mentioned that Rolls-Royce Dawn we were talking about earlier, that's actually a soft top. Even Rolls-Royce didn't bother with the hardtop convertible. They're a little bit heavy, they're a little bit clunky, and they add a lot of cost and expense to the vehicle. So you're not seeing too many of the hardtops anymore.
We talked about this last month, too.
Yeah. But if you're looking for a small convertible right now, one that's not being discussed much is the Buick Cascada, which is a small compact convertible. It's not especially sporty, but it is very refined. It's great for two people. Doesn't cost too much money, and it's kind of fun.
Okay. All right. And let's see. Here's Glenn on WGN. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, you guys are kind of going down memory lane talking nostalgia, and you brought up the Corvair. And my question to Tom is that, do they feel like the Corvair got a raw deal by Ralph Nader? I know the whole story behind it where they had a tendency to roll, but I bring that up because I think it was the movie channel, they had a commercial on the Corvair, and they put this thing through its paces. They even tried rolling it, and the thing wouldn't roll. And I don't know. I was just wondering what he thinks.
Oh, I've always thought the Corvair got a raw deal. A lot of people don't know about the engineering eccentricities to the Corvair, but it was a rear-drive, rear-engine vehicle, very much like a Beetle. And like a Beetle,
right.
because of that layout, the transmission was in back, and it was easier for the manufacturer to create what was called a swing axle, which meant that the axle was hinged in the middle, and it would kind of travel up and down on a slightly angled path. What happened was that it didn't the camber changed, so that the amount of contact patch of the tire changed depending on where it was in the travel of the wheel, and this, it's not an ideal situation, I guess, but no one could ever prove that in reality it mattered at all. And like I said, it was on the Beetle, it was on the Renault Dauphine, which was sold at the same time, And ultimately, Ralph Nader made a very big deal out of it. And it probably was technically an engineering shortcut on the part of General Motors. It did not have a detrimental impact on handling, according to most people who tested the vehicle at the time. But ultimately, I think that Nader was able to prove that they probably should have done something a little bit more sophisticated. The vehicle was not unsafe. I think a lot of people will agree with me on that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it was doomed after his public outcry.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, it did get kind of the bum rap.
It was a quite interesting commercial. I've never seen the commercial on it. And they couldn't get this thing to roll to save its life. And it's like,
All right, Glenn, thanks for the call.
Sorry.
Take care.
All right, thank you.
I like that he said he couldn't get that thing to roll for its life. 847 area code says, I saw a commercial the other day for a motor oil that said you only had to change it once a year. If manufacturers recommend changing it every 3 months, how could you let it go for a year?
Yeah, you probably can do that with a number of pure synthetic blends. You don't want to do it while you're under warranty because it'll probably void your warranty.
Oh.
Yeah, so while you're under warranty, just do what the manufacturer tells you to do. That's the safest thing to do. It keeps you under warranty. It's good for your engine. Mm-hmm. A lot of these synthetic blend oils, Mobil 1 is one of them, you could probably get by with an annual oil change because the oil just doesn't degrade. But you still have to get in there and do that because the oil change, even if the oil's fine, because you want to get the filter changed.
Right.
So, you could go ahead and do that when you're out of warranty, but I wouldn't poke at the manufacturer like that while you're under warranty.
Got it. Makes sense. I'm looking for a used Chevy Trailblazer. Is there a specific year that I should look for, or is there a year that I should avoid?
Well, the Trailblazer went through a major redesign. There's actually a difference between Blazer and Trailblazer. When it became the Trailblazer, it was moved up to a mid-sized platform. I'm not aware of any good years or bad years. One thing I sort of recommend is going with the base inline six-cylinder engine, which was very smooth and far more fuel efficient than the V8 options at the time.
Okay. 630 area code says we want to buy a car, and we're looking at the Subaru Legacy or the Hyundai Elantra. I like them both. Do you have a preference, Tom?
Of the two, I prefer the Subaru just because it has the standard all-wheel drive. I love Subaru all-wheel drive. Full disclosure, I own a Subaru, and I think it's just a great vehicle. The resale value is really high. You can't beat it for snow.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, a lot of news in the world of the electric car this past week, like big announcements over the past week, especially a big one from Volvo.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and this was wildly misinterpreted by the automotive media. Volvo has promised to completely electrify, I'm making air quotes that no one can see, electrify its lineup by 2019. That doesn't mean the cars are going to be all electric. It means that they're all going to use some sort of electric augmentation. So there will be electric cars in the Volvo lineup, but all of them are going to be at least hybrid vehicles. So there's going to be some sort of electric assist to those vehicles. And that's a pretty big deal because they're taking the step towards reaching the federal government's 54.5 MPG mandate by 2025, which is coming up on us fast. But that's one way to do it. What's happening, too, is that there's suppliers out there who are now developing what they call 80-20 hybrid systems, and they're very inexpensive hybrid systems. They get you most of the fuel economy or 80% of the fuel economy of a regular hybrid, but they only cost about 20% as much. These simple, inexpensive systems are going to show up everywhere. Soon. Hybrids are going to be like small turbos.
Yeah.
You're just going to see them everywhere. We're not going to call cars hybrids anymore. It's just going to be part of the product.
It's just going to be a car.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, anyway, there's a lot of interesting news about that as well. But I wanted to quickly get to one of your things that you wrote on the blog. Five vehicles named for islands.
Yes.
Tell us about those.
Yeah, there's a lot of topography out there that becomes car names at some point. There are mountains like Denali and cities like Tacoma. So I was looking for the islands. And you're going to have to forgive me, Nick, because I just lost my internet at home.
Oh, okay.
So I can't remember all the vehicles that were on that list. Well, I remember that one of them was the Capri.
Right.
Which is a personal favorite. We had the Catalina, the Pontiac Catalina.
Right. And there's you've got the Chevrolet Kodiak. The Kodiak, and you have, this is my favorite, I think, the 1953 Kaiser Manhattan.
Yes. Which I like the word Kaiser in front of that.
I do too. Anyway. That's one of the reasons I think it's the best one on this page, man. It's very funny. You also wrote about some vehicles from 1971 that people can check out on the Daily Blog, ConsumerGuideAutomotive.com, and also car_guy_Tom. You can follow him on Twitter. Tom, always a pleasure, man, and we will talk to you next month, okay?
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. Take care. Tom Appel, everybody. And we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up right after this.